Hey everybody, Bill Behrens here with another weekly report at Who's Slamming Who. Like always, we'll go ahead and get a little bit into ratings for both TNA and a little bit also for WWE. Good news in general for the wrestling business and for both companies is that while some of the numbers aren't as good as they have been, other numbers are as good as they've ever been. And overall, audiences are up in general for viewing wrestling on television, at least from both TNA and WWE. And that's a good thing. Anytime there's a greater overall base of audience watching wrestling, for those of us that are down in the seedy underbelly of wrestling, it gives us greater hope that we'll continue to grow and be successful. And I've seen tangible proof of that at both Rampage Pro Wrestling and NWA Anarchy. Neither is filling their building, but both are consistently drawing over 100, between 100 and 150 people, sometimes more, on a fairly regular basis, and it's a active and vocal crowd. And that's a sign that the overall product, wrestling, is working, not just at the local level, but at a larger level. Anyway, moving on into the ratings. Last week, on the 24th, TNA Impact on Spike was able to do a 1.26, 1.5 million viewers. Not their best performance, but by no stretch of the imagination, their worst performance. In fact, their third best of the year. And the good news for Impact in general is that so far this year, they've not yet fallen below a 1.1 rating. And last year, there were struggles to get anywhere near a 1 rating for a goodly part of the year. So, in general, there's an overall great improvement for TNA, tangible evidence being the numbers themselves. Whether everything's perfect yet, well, probably not. But there's some good about last week's program. The show started at a 1.27 with the usual opening and ring talk segment. They seem stuck with that. And it almost always leads to a fairly considerable drop-off in the second segment, and this was no different. Their largest drop-off was from quarter hour one to quarter hour two, 1.27 down to a 1.17, grew back to a 1.22, grew again in quarter hour four to a 1.23. The big surge in quarter hour five. We've always noted quarter hour five, the top of the hour, is frequently when they have the greatest potential to draw an audience if there's something good to watch. And in this particular case, it clearly was Ric Flair leading into the AJ Styles spot, the brawl with Hernandez getting involved, Fortune, Matt Morgan. That drove the segment, and the tangible proof of that is that much of the audience was retained going into quarter hour six, which did a 1.35. But quarter hour six, which featured a ladies' match, may not have held the audience as expected, because by quarter hour seven, the audience was down to a 1.17. but then grew back in quarter hour eight to a 1.24. So the good news is that their peak at a 1.42 was very strong, and the overall flow of the program wasn't terrible, although it did bounce around and reached two different 1.17s in quarter hour two and quarter hour seven. But it also retained overall the general audience. The overall rating was a 1.26. The show started at a 1.27, and the show ended at a 1.24. That's a pretty good story. The bouncing around can be explained in a variety of ways, and it's usually explained best if you're trying to track these numbers by looking at what is in the previous segment, because the audience decides to leave by what they're watching, not what's coming up. The rejection is rarely, oh my gosh, it's another quarter hour and I don't like this segment, I'll turn away. It's usually, I didn't like what happened, they've gone to commercial, and when they come back, I'm not here for what that is, and then after 15 minutes, maybe I'll come back and try again. And that's usually the way these things kind of work. One thing that was interesting is that both of the Jarrett videos that were in the program were in the lowest rated segments. Coincidence? Who knows? However, the highest rated segment did feature the Jarrett segment in the church, confusing the issue. But I do think in general that there's both a great appeal to currently Jeff Jarrett's heel character and a tremendous turnoff factor to how the angle with him, Kurt, and Kurt's ex-wife, Jeff's current wife, is being played out. somebody, from my perspective, is simply trying to get too cute with it. And the stipulation a while ago, it's not the current stipulation, where literally the custody of the family's children, those from the Angle, Karen, from the Karen-Kurt marriage, that those children would be in any way up for grabs in a wrestling match, stretches any degree of credibility. I know that the creative team likes the idea of let's pull things out of reality, and that's wonderful, but if you base what you're doing in a greater reality, common sense, I think you'll end up getting further. I've told many people I would have been much more entertained because of Karen's character, because of how Jeff's playing his character, and because of how Kurt's playing his, if we took a huge step backward in wrestling and went back to some old school wrestling stuff and literally did something like was done with Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin and the Lovely Sunshine back in Texas years ago, when with David Von Erich, the end result was by losing a match, Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin and Sunshine had to work on David Von Erich's farm doing all this nasty work that the girl could bitch about and the guy could bitch about. And it was very, very entertaining, but also realistic that it could happen because you've got these guys under contract, they agreed to the stipulation, and they now have to do this garbage work. Just imagine Karen having to go into Kurt's house and clean and cook and pick up after him. In theory, things that could be suggested she never did before. I think that would be much more entertaining than wondering whether Kurt's going to win a match and retain his children. So that's just my thought process. I think for the good that's been done with that angle, and there has been a lot of good, the silly aspect of it is so bad that it may be hurting the overall audience appeal of the angle and leading to what we would call bad heat rather than good heat. Moving on with ratings. WWE is on a roll right now as they head toward WrestleMania with the return of major stars like The Rock and Steve Austin in various roles, and the back and forth with Rock and Cena is becoming compelling to fans, it appears. Raw delivered this last Monday, I record this on Thursday, delivered a 3.8 rating. SmackDown last week delivered its highest rating to date since moving to Sci-Fi at a 2.31. And in fact, the indicators are this is a process that's going to continue. Raw for 2 weeks in a row has been at 3.9, 3.8, highest numbers they've achieved in quite a while. And I had noted a while ago that at least initially in the year, early in the year, the first month or so, Impact was looking better based on last year's year-to-date numbers to this year's year-to-date numbers. Now all three programs are doing better this year in the year-to-date average than they did, and they ended up last year. Raw currently is at a year-to-date 3.37. Last year was a 3.28. Impact, the biggest increase, was at a 1.22 this year so far. Last year, a 1.06. Numbers are smaller, but the percentage increase larger because of that. SmackDown currently at a 2.02, and last year they finished up at a 1.81. So tangible improvement for all of those companies and a good overall sign, as I said earlier, for the wrestling business in general, and my hope that the excitement generated at the larger league level leads to greater opportunity for us down in the seedy underbelly of wrestling. Some greater indicator is that both TNA and Ring of Honor, while not doing the greatest houses ever in the history of wrestling, are not doing terrible houses. It used to be a bad generalization that TNA, when it went out on the road, drew hundreds and usually less than 1,000 people at many of its house shows, and that was true for most of the early experience in house shows for the company. It's taken quite a while to generate any kind of audience, and it's not like they're beginning to fill buildings yet like WWE does, but there's a greater evidence of growth for the company. When they went to Fayetteville for the television taping on the 24th of the month, they had a paid gate of 3,015 attendance in the building, 3,500. The rest were comps, obviously. But that's not bad at all and looked good in the taping. And it was a hot, enthusiastic crowd. And as I think Scott Steiner may have tweeted following up, certainly forces TNA to not just start thinking about putting the show on the road, but going live with the show if they could. Surprises are best when they're live, as evidenced by The Rock's return to WWE. The tangible immediate benefit is there. When you premiere somebody, a la the return of Sting, which we'll see coming up, and you already know he's returned, you may get additional bonus viewers, and certainly TNA probably will, and that'll be good for them. But you can only imagine what the potential bump in audience might have been if that had been live and if the tease going through had been effective, much as it was for the return of The Rock and the return of Undertaker and the return, surprise return of Hunter Hearst Helmsley and all the other stunting that WWE has been doing going into WrestleMania. If TNA Live were able to do similar things, I think you'd be seeing even greater growth right now in the numbers. But even still, the stunting they're doing so far has benefited them, and it'll be interesting to see what the return of Sting, who, for whatever reason, they felt they immediately had to put the title on, how that will impact TNA's numbers, next set of numbers, in fact. But as I looked at house show numbers, I mentioned that Fayetteville TNA did 3,015. Then they followed that with a house show in Norfolk doing 1,500, and then a house show in Richmond doing 1,200, both perfectly acceptable numbers. The last two Ring of Honor shows, by the way, for example, Dayton, which has always been a smaller delivery. I once told Gabe Sapolsky that Dayton was one of his most successful towns, and that was confusing. But I pointed out that the 500, 600, 700 that they get in Dayton, based on the size of the town, that they were pulling a greater percentage of local folk in than getting a little over 1,000 in Chicago, because Chicago was six times the size of Dayton, and their Chicago numbers were never six times the crowd of Dayton, and this was proved again this time. Dayton did 565 paid, and Chicago did 1,400 for their ninth anniversary show. So while good numbers for both, Dayton continues to be, while a smaller town, a successful town in terms of the overall pull from that marketplace based on percentage. So just a little bit of information from all of the various companies, both house show and event numbers, and a little bit of information on ratings, and we'll continue that process in the weeks to come. Let's see, moving on. This weekend I'll be at Rampage Pro Wrestling down in Warner Robins, Georgia. Last weekend I was at NWA Anarchy for its most recent television taping as Anarchy continues toward Hardcore Hell on April 9th, the last show that will be promoted by Jerry Palmer before new ownership will take over NWA Anarchy. And that, by the way, is, it appears, a done deal, not yet to be announced, the specifics of which. But there will be an NWA Anarchy, or at least wrestling in the NWA arena in Cornelia, Georgia, that will follow the April 9th final Jerry Palmer show. But speaking of Rampage, we've got a great show coming up for this weekend, two different eight-man tag team matches, which will sandwich the show. The first half main, let's call it, is Doc Gayton, Mr. Jones, and the Usual Suspects taking on Charlie Cash's group of the Judge, Bobby Moore, and the Hate Junkies. And then in the second half, Jimmy Rave and Mike Posey, representing Jimmy Rave Approve, with the addition of Hot Like Lava, Crew Jones, and Sean Banks, they'll be taking on Kyle Matthews, Frankie Valentine, Bull Buchanan, and J-Rod. That, and Jeremy Bain defends his title twice throughout the taping, and some other great matches throughout. It'll be a tremendous evening. And last of several shows that will actually be on Saturdays at 7 p.m., where we've been since I got started with the company 40-some weeks ago. There's going to be a change to Sunday coming up with a brief stop at an earlier time on Saturday. Specifically, WrestleMania weekend on the 2nd. Normally that Saturday we would do a 7 o'clock show, but that evening much of the Rampage talent is going to be on the Dragon Gate USA card. Jimmy Rave versus Kyle Matthews, Bull Buchanan will be action, The Usual Suspects will be in action, Hot Like Lava in action, Sugar Dunkerton, Sal Renaro. So real reason to go to that Dragon Gate show that night. So the show had to move, and it will move that weekend to noon on Saturday. So for the next two shows, which would be the upcoming show on the 5th this weekend and the show on the 19th of March, will be at 7 p.m. on Saturday, then on the 2nd, noon on Saturday, and then starting April 17th, Sunday, we'll move to the, I guess you could say, every other Sunday at 3 p.m. So April 17th at 3 p.m., and then May 1st will be the next big show, Memorial Mayhem, on April 1st at 3 p.m., and then on we'll go every other week at 3 p.m. for Rampage Pro Wrestling. A reminder, you can watch the Rampage television program, an excellent product, at rampageprowrestling.net. And if you're in Middle Georgia, on the Fox affiliate Saturday morning at 9, on the MyTV network on Saturday, on the Cox Communications throughout their schedule, both the half-hour and hour program. So lots of opportunities to watch Rampage Pro Wrestling and its stars. Coming up very soon, there'll be an appearance by